Blog.
Everyone, this is Monica Liel welcoming you to the LL Research radio program, In the Now, Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert. Today is November 5th, 2010. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Along with hosting In the Now, Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert, I am the head moderator of the Bring Forth Forums at bringforth.org. That's bring4th.org. I'll be asking Carla questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask Carla a question, please join the chat room on the webpage for In the Now at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. If you'd like to ask Carla a question live on the air, call 347-884-8770 and press the 1 key when prompted by Blog Talk's automated system. When you call, you'll be able to hear the show, but you will be on mute until I patch you through to Carla. Again, that number is 347-884-8770. When done, I'll put you back on mute, at which time you can either continue to listen to the show by phone or you can hang up and listen to the show on your computer. When submitting questions, please remember, this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I am Monica Liel, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert of LL Research. You're listening to the worthy successor to last year's live chat on the Bring Forth website. This is our show on prime time, and we will be here every Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern. Carla, how are you doing today?
Hey, Monica, I'm doing really well. I've got a visitor today.
Oh, you do?
I do. I am excited. I am so excited. There's a book called A Wanderer's Handbook that came out 10 years ago, and it's been kindly received. But, you know, it was the abridged version. There were 400 pages of quotes from wanderers all over the world that I had to take out so that it would be short enough a book to print. You know, because otherwise it would have been like one of those big old Bibles or, you know, a huge tome, the Oxford English Dictionary, you know, too big to publish. So we're going to make an e-book of the whole thing and put the unabridged version online. And and my friend Jude, whose credit is the Aaron Kuo dialogues, which will come out next year, which took a massive amount of editing. She is now going to put all the text and all of the quotes back in that were taken out.
And, oh, wow.
She's here this weekend to pick up the manuscript and get all the stuff I have online and take all my folders of quote pages so that she can make sure all the quotes are there and are in the right order. So it's a huge, another huge job, 1,200 pages of editing. But
wow.
She can do it.
Okay.
And I'm so thrilled.
Fantastic.
And we just I was going to tell you, we just had a gathering. We just had the cycle three, the third generation of channeling students went through their introductory class this last 4 days. And I've put the last person on the plane yesterday. So it's just a real good time here at L&L Research.
Oh, that's fantastic. How did that channeling intensive go?
It went really well. It was probably the best single class I've ever had. It was a small class, and all three of the ladies that were attempting to learn channeling were quite gifted. So it was just a privilege and a pleasure to help them out and get them started.
Fantastic. Now, on the Wanderer's Handbook, are you just adding all the quotes back in, or will there be any changes to the text?
There will probably be necessary changes to the text in that when you take out seven quotes and you've only got three left, then you have to rewrite the bridge back into the text. So all of those bridges back into the text will have to be looked at by me to see if I came up with anything just remotely interesting, you understand, when I was redoing them, anything I want to save. Otherwise, I'll just restore the original text.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay.
It's exciting for me.
Well, yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, we have a live caller from area code 516 who would like to join our conversation, so I'm going to invite this person in. Hi, are you there?
Yeah, hi, how are you?
Fantastic. Who am I speaking to?
This is Narelle from
Narelle. Oh,
right.
Hi.
How are you?
Great. You know, it's so cool to actually get to talk to people that I talk to all the time on the forum, and now finally get to hear your voice. So feel like I know you.
Well, exactly. I mean, I feel the same way. I feel like I'm part of a family, you know. And
mm-hmm.
I actually came to the forums a year ago. This is a year. I came last November, and you know, so obviously it's like anything else. You start to look at the post and you get to know people, and you know, you see where people are coming from, you know, and you know, and I've sent you some PMs, and you know, and there have been a lot of different discussions about a lot of interesting things, and you get to feel close to people, you know, intimate. Mm-hmm. And it's like everybody has a vibe, you know. Everybody has something that stands out about them, and I feel like I'm a part of the family there on the forum, so I really appreciate it.
Oh, that is so wonderful. That is just beautiful to hear you say that. That really makes it all worthwhile. Thank you so much. Narelle?
How do you say
Narelle. It? Narelle?
Right.
Okay.
Narelle, right.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, would you like to ask a question to Carla?
Yeah. Hi, Carla. How are you?
Hey, Narelle, it's wonderful to hear you say that about the forums. I've tried for years to get a good spiritually oriented site where people could roost, hang out, and feel like they're really part of a family, because we here at L&L Research truly do feel that our people are there and they find us, and we want them to trust that this is a safe place and a fun place to roost and to talk.
Know, before I ask my question, I just want to go a little bit into my experience, and then, you know, just so you can understand what I've been going through. But I came there, I actually had seen some stuff about David Wilcock and his relationship to Edgar Cayce, and then there was a link to LL Research, right? So I came on to LL Research, and I'm on the forums, and then somebody gave me a link to where you made those three questions about, are you a wanderer, you know?
Yes.
And I read that, and it hit me like a ton of bricks, you know? I think the first statement is, you are loved, you know? And so many times we hear, and I'm, you know, I've read the Bible all my life, and I've been, you know, I'm familiar with it, and, you know, it talks about love in the Bible, but many times the love that I see in the Bible is not unconditional. You know, it's like,
true.
We love you, but you're a sinner, so you can't sit at the table with us. You know,
right.
It's hello. You know, I am a passionate person, but I can't say that, you know, along with anybody else, that I'm a perfect person. You know, sometimes my passions get me involved in stuff, you know, that whatever, you know, but that's just who I am. But I know that passion is there within me to do good. But I saw that. I said, you are loved, you are not alone, and you have a purpose. And that made so much sense to me. You know, it was finally like somebody is accepting me unconditionally as I am without having to make some kind of changes, you know. And I just felt like I was coming home when I read that, you know.
Oh, excellent.
And one other thing I wanted to say before I go into the question is that I read your blogs, and I saw your commentary about your husband, right, where you wrote the description of who your husband is, basically, as a person, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm reading that, and I said, this is so beautiful, you know. And the thought came to me, what when I was reading that description of Jim, I thought of the words in the Bible where Christ saw Nathanael coming, right? And he looked at him. He was far off. But he said, truly an Israelite in whom there is no guile.
Yeah.
And I looked at your description of your husband, and I said, truly, here's a man with no guile, you know?
That is
and,
so true.
You know, and that's, to me, that's the highest compliment that I could pay to anybody, because so much in this world, we're covered by this body, and this body covers a multitude of stuff that goes on underneath that's not transparent. And it's difficult in this world to establish relationships where at some time you're not, how can I put it, surprised or undermined by something that comes out that you didn't even realize was there, you know? And so, you know, it's, you know, I saw that and I said, that's truly a man that, you know, I could appreciate, you know, and a rare man to find on this earth. But the question that I have is, I'd like you to go into the difference between spiritual healing and what is practiced as medicine today. Because, and let me go a little deeper into that. Medicine today, and I'm talking even about a holistic approach, we attempt to address the physical end of it. You know, it's like either take this drug, take this herb, all of these things. But if you look at the spiritual healing that went on, and again, my foundation is primarily in the Bible, so I can't talk a lot about what happened in the Eastern cultures, but if you look at what Christ did, if you look at what the Apostle Paul did, if you look at what Peter and John did when they were walking into the temple, and a man who was lame from birth, and Peter looked at him, and he raised his cup, he said, you know, he was expecting an offering. And Peter looks at him and he says, gold and silver have I none, but such as I have I give unto you. In the name of Jesus Christ, arise and walk. And all of a sudden the man was whole. Now that's, he didn't have to come back for a follow-up visit. You know, I mean, it was when, there's no follow-up on that. You know, either you're lame and then you're not. When Christ healed, there were no follow-ups. You know, there was, you know, don't see me in 3 months. We got to take a lot of blood tests, you know. So obviously, mankind right now, we're afflicted with many physical conditions, mental conditions, spiritual conditions, and we do our best to deal with it, but there is a spiritual healing that exists, and I'll listen to your comments, okay?
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you, Narelle.
Yeah, sure.
The comments you made about the Bible are quite accurate, and I think it helps to remember that Jesus didn't write it. Jesus didn't write the Old Testament. He didn't write the New Testament. The only thing of Jesus's that are in there are quotations about him by people who had imperfect memory. And so we're always groping at the mystery of his parables. But he would be appalled at what has been done through the centuries in his name, certainly. And of course, he was not a Christian, and he was an Eastern mystic. He was from that area that's part of Syria today and part of the Middle East. So we do have coming into the Christian religion the Essenic mysticism of Jesus the Christ, and it was systematically rooted out of the New Testament within about 300 years of the church is being started after Jesus' death. But to healing, let us turn our attention. The Law of One suggests that healing is one of the rich menu choices that we have when we click on the icon of the Gateway to Intelligent Infinity. That needs a little bit of background. The Gateway to Intelligent Infinity is above the head, not in the physical sense, but in the metaphysical sense, because the electric body or the energy body that we came into this physical vehicle using is inextricably wound into the physical body by the silver cord. And while that silver cord is intact, we as soul streams are located in third density earth, in a physical body, and behind the veil of forgetting, so that all that we do, spiritually speaking, is done because we have faith. And it isn't a faith that has content. It is the faith that causes you to leap into midair saying, I know that everything is all right. All is well, and all will be well, to quote a saint. So we are in this situation of having to discover for ourselves what faith really is. And faith is an attitude. It is not a system of beliefs. It is not a list of tenets. It is not the Ten Commandments or even Jesus's two commandments, love the Lord thy God and love thy neighbor as thyself, with which he replaced all the law and the prophets in the New Testament. Faith is an attitude that says, I am no longer in the box. I am a citizen of eternity. I am comfortable with infinity. And I am here for an incarnation. But there's a lot more to me than you can see. There's a lot more to me than I can see. And I am seeking to know myself better and better, so that I may express myself by making choices that are service to others as opposed to service to self. And a lot of us are doing that now. A lot of us have awakened and are trying to live lives that satisfy us ethically, spiritually, emotionally, that we are trying to live in a larger amphitheater, say, and a larger arena than the one that can be seen with physical eyes. And healing is one of several choices that you can make if your energy body is completely open and you rest in your open heart and set your intention to heal or to teach or to rest in passive radiation of light. In other words, tabernacling with the one infinite creator, meditating, walking in nature, journaling, that kind of exercise. All of those options are through the gateway to intelligent infinity. In other words, through the looking glass, through Alice's rabbit hole, from physical space-time to metaphysical time-space. Now, all the inner planes open up to time-space. All of the outer planes open up to time-space. All the densities open up in time-space. So we have a connection with all that there is through this gateway to intelligent infinity. We can set our intention to heal by resting in our open heart and then allowing ourselves to move through the gateway and make our choice that we wish to be healers. And therefore, the energy starts moving through us. It is not our energy. Our human compassion wears out quickly. The infinite love and the light of the one creator never wears out. It's infinite. And that's what that means. Never wears out. Doesn't go anywhere. You can trust it. It's stable. It'll stay there and it will always work. But in order to access that, you simply need to know that that's the way it works. You can't be questioning it. You can't be trying to prove it. And that's where we go wrong so often. And that's where, of course, the iatrogenic medicine, the medicine of the American Medical Association, gets it wrong. It's not that they get it wrong. It's that they have too much knowledge. They don't have enough room for faith. Now, most doctors that I have known have been very loving people. They started out wanting to heal people. They started out full of compassion, wanting to be healers. Then they went to pre-med, and they learned this and that about the body, learned all the names of the bones and the muscles and the connective tissues, and then they went to medical school and learned the Latin names for everything, and then they became embedded in the hospital system, and there were ways to do things, and there were considerations to be made. A lot of what doctors ask for in terms of the blood tests and so forth you're talking about are asked for by the insurance companies, who wants to make sure that if a person's being treated that there's a reason for it and not just a whim on the doctor's part. So they have to substantiate and prove and so forth and so on. They are so hampered, they are so tied down, that they gradually lose any hope of being healers in the metaphysical sense. And they simply look at so many people per day, and in the very short amount of time that they're given with each patient, they've got to do something. So what do you think they do? They pull out their little book and they look up a drug to give, or they look up a test that might show what's wrong. And it's medicine practiced by those who have a tremendous ability to quantify medicine, but almost no ability to have quality in it. That simply is not something that is taught in medical school. So that's the first kind of medicine, and it's called iatrogenic medicine, the word meaning that the doctors can actually cause harm, because a lot of medicines have their side effects, and you can suggest medicines that clash with each other, and you can make a patient awfully sick. Who was the Latin pundit that wrote, "I was feeling fine until I saw my doctor"? So this is like four centuries before Christ, the guy wrote that. And I think it's still true. Okay, now that's healing that started in Green Ray, and it got railroaded away from Green Ray. It is now firmly entrenched in Yellow Ray. It's the job that the guy does to make a living. And most doctors do not transcend that because they don't have time. And it's designed that way. It's designed that way. So, number two, you can meet a lot of people who are capable of laying hands on you and making a change in the way you feel. That's a genuine ability. However, it is not Green Ray, it's Yellow Ray, because of the fact that they are not opening to the gateway to intelligent infinity. They're not asking for the help of the infinite creator and those energies and essences that come to you through the gateway from the creator, angels and so forth. So what you're getting with a person that's healing from his will to heal, his Yellow Ray, is you're getting a change in your experience because of the strength of his will. There are people with that ability, and they can make people feel better for an hour or even longer, maybe a day. It's going to wear off. It is a gift that is given, and it's a respite for many people. They appreciate not hurting for an hour or for a day. That's great. But true spiritual healing is that in which the spirit involved, the instrument of healing, the person that wants to heal, gives up his own will. He gives up what he thinks he knows about the situation. And he asks to have energy move through him and go to wherever in the body, the mind, or the spirit that things are amiss. He does not know, and he does not have to know, how the healing is going, because the healing is like the Holy Spirit in that it moves like the wind and it goes where it's needed, and no one can predict that. So who knows? You think that you're looking at a situation, but within the connection between the mind and the body, there may be something with the psyche and the soma creating an unusual connection, which is the root cause of the problem. You can't know that as a human, but spirit can know that. So that is what happens with Reiki healing, for instance, or with anyone who works with crystals, or who just simply lays on hands, or who does absent healing, or who heals by prayer. There are many, many ways to work on healing. But the thing that spiritual healers have in common, whatever their techniques, is that they most gladly and most enthusiastically lay down their little will and say, please, Lord, please, Creator, move through me and help this person whom I love unconditionally. And it's that love, it's that sitting in the open heart and availing oneself of this energy that is the mark of the spiritual healer. I have had psychic surgery from two very religious people, one in Mexico, whose name was Pachita, and five different psychic surgeons in the Philippines in 75. Pachita was 78. They're all probably dead by now. But it was very instructive in that, especially in the Philippines, the healer would pull on a banner that she had over her head. It was all in Spanish, of course, since it was the Philippines. But that banner just basically said that she was one of the Confederation of Psychic Healers and that they believed in Jesus the Christ and that Jesus the Christ was the one that was doing the healing. So there is always a giving up of the will and a willingness to be the instrument of healing that is the heart of the spiritual healing. And it always comes in an energy in which there is tremendous love, so that even if you're nervous, say as a psychic surgeon's patient, once that healer touches you, there's no more nervousness. You feel totally at peace and comfortable. Would you like to follow that question up? I'd be glad to talk more about it, but that's about what I know about spiritual healing.
No, I mean, that was very beautiful, and I think that gets to the core of, I mean, what you're saying about spiritual healing is that it's coming from a place of love, and the individual who is basically a conduit, and in a sense, you could say it's a form of channeling in that you're bringing the healing energy through yourself into the person, realizing that it's not coming from you, but that it's coming from the Creator, you know. And that's the key, is when we get out of our ego and let the Creator move through us, anything I think is possible. So I think that really answers it for me, and I appreciate that.
Okay, well, thank you, Narelle. Delighted. Okay. Yeah, who was it? It was somebody connected with We Are the World, We Are the Children. Remember when they made that video with all the different people singing different parts of that song? Mm-hmm. Quincy Jones, I think it was, and he said, all right, everybody, check your egos at the door. Well, thanks so much, Narelle. I appreciated talking to you.
Thank you. Nice talking to you, caller. Have a nice evening. Bye-bye.
You too.
Thanks, Narelle. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, you are listening to In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert. If you have any questions for Carla, please call us at 347-884-8770. Be sure to press the 1 key to let us know that you'd like to ask your question live. And Carla, I'm going to go to a question submitted on bringforth.org. That is our forum for seekers of the Law of One. That is bringforth, and then the number 4, th.org. This question is from Shauna. She says, hi, Carla. I am deeply grateful for the work you're doing. It has had such a tremendous impact on my life. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I am not a channel. Three thank yous there. I am not a channel and not very familiar with channeling in general other than what I've read here and at LL Research. I'd love to know how I can learn more about my inner guides. I know they've been with me my whole life. I have experienced their protective presence on so many occasions. What I would like to hear you speak about is how I can go deeper into learning who they are and how to proactively engage their guidance. Blessings and love always, Shauna. And then she added an edit. Smiling to myself, after posting this question for you, I decided to start reading your articles beginning with 2006 and found one that was just what I needed. So many blessings.
Okay, Shauna, well, thank you so much for it's debatable to me whether or not I should mention part of the answer, but I think I really do need to. Part of the answer is simple. Part of the answer is much more complex. The simple part of the answer is that in getting to know your guides, you have the capacity to communicate with your guides. If you've ever read Conversations with God, for instance, he sat down with a pencil and a piece of paper, and he wrote his first question out, and he got something in his mind immediately thereafter. He wrote it down. It was an answer. He wrote again, and he got another answer. And I don't know how many books he's written now doing this, but I know it's at least three. The shortcut to getting to know your guidance system is simply to set your intention to communicate with a guidance system, and then to set aside time to prepare yourself for that time by finding a place where you can either be by yourself or where the people that you're with are not hampering your work. And then simply giving that time up to the seeking for truth. And you write questions to your guides, your guides answer, and along the line somewhere you get a feeling, more and more specific feeling, as to the nature of your guidance system. The part that I was debating talking about, but which I will mention to you because I have a feeling that it's really what you're looking for, is that I could teach you a way of focusing your mind, moving into a dedicated space within yourself, and actually meeting your guides. However, I can't teach it to you over the radio or in the 27 minutes remaining in this show. I just taught that skill this last week in the process of teaching people to channel, because it's important to connect with your guidance system in the process of tuning to channel. It's important to be your highest and best self when you come to channel. So one of the things that I teach is the resource of connecting with your guidance system. And if you ever want to go through the introductory course of learning to channel, even if you don't want to learn to channel, you just want to learn your guidance system, there are aspects of that course that would be very rewarding to you, I think, because it may surprise you who your guidance system is or how it feels to you when you have a closer look at what they actually seem to feel like and be like when you clap your metaphysical eyes on them. So if you're interested, I have no idea when a fourth cycle of the channeling intensives will begin because I'm facing some surgery, but it'll happen at some point. So stay in touch with contact@llresearch.org and get your name on the waiting list for the next one if you're interested in that.
Okay. All right. Well, we don't have any other live callers at the moment, so I actually have a question for you, Carla. Now, this is something I've been wondering because of being the moderator of bringforth.org regarding avoiding getting into a dogma or a doctrine. Carla, you've expressed with quite a degree of passion that you don't want the Law of One turned into a religion, doctrine, or cult of personality. You even said, "Not on my watch." Which
That's
I
right.
think conveyed that pretty well. But on the forum, you know, we enjoy discussing our interpretations, and it has been suggested that someday our words and the words of Ra might actually be made into a doctrine, despite our intentions to not have that happen. For example, suppose two people are discussing a very complex topic, what appears very complex to us, and each backs up his or her interpretation with quotes from the Law of One, each thinking that their interpretation is correct. How do we avoid becoming the next generation's religion, breaking off into denominations based on those differing opinions, like Christianity has now with thousands of denominations based on a slightly different interpretation of a particular scripture? How do we honor and respect our differences in opinion and keep the Law of One as our personal guidance, and yet, during the course of these discussions, avoid falling into that trap of establishing dogma?
It's very difficult to do because people want black and white answers, and it's a gray, gray world. So there is always the temptation to draw a line in the sand and say, this is the way it is. A good example of this is that there is a settled disagreement between me and David Wilcock on the issue of 12/21/2012, the winter solstice of 2012. Wilcock believes that the world will sort of blink out at that point, and we'll all just be either in fourth density or we will be left behind. I have no fear that, if that happened, that it would be an unpleasant experience. I don't shy away from that because I fear it. I shy away from that interpretation because of the same reason I shied away from the Y2K thing. It was a non-event. And the winter solstice of 2012, I believe, is also a non-event as far as a physical event. I believe that it will take place in metaphysical time-space, and nothing will happen here that we can see. Lots will be happening out of sight in the inner planes, but that does not concern the physical illusion as we see it. And Wilcock has written quite a handsome apology for his point of view, quoting the Law of One backwards and forwards and up and down. Of course, that material was collected in 1981 through 1984. We're more than 30 years down the road from that. And is that right, 30, 25?
Yep.
Close on 30 years, not quite. Not more than 30 years. Anyway, my edition is not as good as my metaphysics, you'll notice. Anyway, if two people that are very familiar with the Law of One, I as the channel and Wilcock is one of the leading scholars of the Law of One, can have that fundamental disagreement, I'd say just about anybody is going to have a disagreement when they get far enough into the more abstruse points of that philosophy. But, for instance, have you ever met a Freudian psychologist who was almost vitriolic about some of the other psychological ways of looking at things? A Jungian and a Freudian, for instance, generally clash because Freud looked at the mind one way, Jung looked at it another way. No matter what philosophy, system, or religion that you have in mind, people will have a tendency to rob it of its mystery in order to make it black and white. This is good, this is not good. Because, do you know that old country song, I need four walls around me to make me a life, to keep me from slipping away? Well, that old country song really says it all when it comes to why people like the more fundamentalist, inerrantist, and conservative religions. They like that because they like to know that what they're doing is right, and they like to know what's wrong, so that they can always stay on the good side and never stray to the bad side. And naturally, when people think that way, then there's a tremendous amount of judgment. There's a tremendous amount of guilt if you don't happen to, like if your religion doesn't believe in dancing and you go dance, you can have guilt about moving your arms and legs in rhythm to music as if that were somehow wrong. So it is very difficult to keep any system from having its adherents that want to make it dogmatic and say, if you can't believe in the law of one unless you believe this, 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 and this. And they're all right in terms of saying, you know, you've got to have these things in the philosophy to make it a philosophy, as long as they stay with spiritual principles. If they say, well, if you want to follow the law of one, you have to reckon with unity, free will, love, light, and polarity. That's all fine. But when people start telling you what love is, what light is, and what it is not, what polarity is, and what it is not, and start trying to craft an airtight vehicle that will take you on the stairway to heaven, then they have gone too far. And they are no longer those who are using the ample resources of a wonderful system of cosmology, which is what the law of one is. And they have started trying to make four walls around themselves to keep their life in order and keep them from slipping away. Those who read the law of one are fully aware that those of Ra were not at all interested in making anyone believe anything. When asked about the end times, they said they didn't concern themselves with what brought about the end times. It was just one of those things. The inconveniences have begun. You're going to find it inconvenient. And then they said, well, you know, it's possible. You know, the possibility vortices are infinite. It hasn't happened yet. It could happen differently. We don't know. You know, we can't tell you what with your free will you're going to do. So I think that the way I work with it is that when anybody starts attempting to narrow down and confine the law of one, I remind them that it is a philosophical system and that it is a set of resources for the spiritual seeker to use. And as such, it is wonderful. But as a be-all, end-all religion, it really doesn't do it all. It is too pure and clear and clean a system to collect the emotional excesses that go with wanting to make people special or sources special or words special. I'm not saying that the Ra isn't a special group. I'm not saying that their words are not special, or even that I'm not a special human being. We all are. But I'm also a bozo, and they would say the same thing. They would not be at all interested in having people worship them or do anything except say, thanks, that was a really good thing. I'm going to think about that. That's why they're here. That's why the Confederation of Angels and Planets in the service of the One Infinite Creator is here. They are not here to change anybody's mind. They are here to make thoughts available. And these are not even thoughts that are unusual thoughts. These are thoughts of love and light and unity. These are the perennial wisdom. They arrange these thoughts with a certain elegance of arrangement in the system of philosophy called cosmology, which means it explains how we began, what we're doing here, and where we're going. It's very helpful, very useful to have this kind of information. And I believe it's a source that I personally trust. I have found it to be nothing but good as I have worked with it. But if people write to me and say, I'm having trouble with this or that precept, I write them and I say, then move on. Do not stay with the law of one. Do not struggle with the law of one. Move on to something that excites you, that resonates to you. And in terms of the people around me, I keep people from admiring me too much, mostly just by being an idiot from time to time, actually on a daily basis. But also, I have in my hip pocket a wonderful resource, and that is that I made a movie along with Don Elkins in 1972 called The Girl Snatchers, which was really a bad movie. And because of the fact that the lady that played the topless role in it quit the day of the shooting, and we had cameras rolling and nobody to play the part, I ended up playing the topless part. I didn't have the equipment to play a topless part, let me tell you. By, I don't know, 4 or 5 cup sizes, I did not have that you know, traditional equipment, the Victoria's Secret look. But it actually was a funnier movie because of the fact that I didn't. So, you know, I slapped myself on a cheap blonde wig and some aviator sunglasses. And I said the lines because I did know the lines. I'd written them. So it was a triumph of a movie in that it got made at all. But it was a bad, bad movie. And we were making it so that we could learn the business, so that we could make a movie about The Crucifixion of Esmeralda Sweetwater, which is the novel that we written. We really wanted to make it into a movie. It never got made into a movie. So that never happened, but I did learn a lot about the movie business, and I actually was a star. Well, since it's such a bad movie, I have a couple of times in my long career as whatever I am, I have forced members of my staff to watch that movie, and believe me, I fall off the pedestal so fast, and they can't even look at me without remembering the movie and the racket that I show to Scott and everybody else. And it's marvelous for completely depressing any pretension I might have.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Works great.
Wow.
But that's pretty much it. I mean, you can't keep people from trying to make a religion out of something that they just love. They read it, they love it, they've got to have it. And of course, then, see, the problem with that is then they want to give it to everybody else and get them to believe it too. And that's the step too far. That's where you've got to rein yourself back in and wait for some person to ask you a question where you know the interest is there, and then you can just tell them anything you know. That's fine. But buttonholing people and saying, I've got this wonderful Law of One thing, you've just got to see it, it is absolutely wonderful, that is one step over the line. We all have free will, and you need to respect people's right to sleep if they're going to sleep. And you consider, these people are completely zoned out. They are in the matrix. They are not aware of what's outside the box. That's okay. Just remember, everybody's got his own time to wake up, and everybody will wake up. It's just a matter of when. And when is something that they get to decide.
Okay. Well, that's definitely reassuring. Thank you, Carla. That does help. That definitely helps a lot. We are almost out of time, and we have a caller. We've got about 10 minutes of the show left. So I'm going to take our caller, but I'm going to let you know we're going to have to probably make this a little bit shorter answer than normal. This is from area code 514. Are you with us?
Hi, how are you? Hello?
Hey, who are we talking to?
Hi, it's Peel Street Guy.
Hey, Peels. Glad
to
have
you
back.
How are you guys doing? Thank you.
Well,
great show. I have 3 questions answered already.
Okay. Well, good. Since we don't have much time left, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, I see
that.
You
got time for one more quick question.
Well, maybe this is not the greatest time then, but I was just wondering, Carla, if you could give any advice for a group that cannot visit you of 3 that would wish to maybe try and channel in after a while, you know, after some practice and stuff.
Okay, Peels, it's good to hear your voice.
Thank you.
I'm not saying that I'm the only one that you can come to. I'm sure there are other good channeling teachers out there. But what you have to do is find a group that's close to you, whose leader you fully respect and in whom you can place your trust. The problem with trying to do this on your own is that it's a very crowded universe out there. And my teaching is not so much to open the channel as it is to show someone how to prepare to open the channel. All the work of channeling is done before you ever open and allow the channel to come through. You are trying to tune yourself to your highest and best. You are then going through the gateway to intelligent infinity and asking for, setting your intention to channel the highest and best contact that you can carry. And it's just like a radio. You tune yourself to the highest and best vibration that you are, the best frequency. And of all the stations on the radio, there's one that's just you, that's just perfect for you. And you tune to that frequency, and then you call that frequency to you by the compatibility it has with you. It's just natural for a radio signal to come in on the frequency that you're open to. And so the frequency that you tune yourself to is all important. It can't be too high because you need to sustain it. It can't be less than your best or you won't be getting your best information. So I would say you really need to find someone that is capable of giving you the resources that you need to get into the right tuning, the best tuning that you have, and then to give you a safe place to practice until you get it, because there's always this time when it's effortful and it's hard, and then something clicks and the channel has moved past that difficulty and is much more fluent. So I can't give you carte blanche and say, sure, it'll be fine. It is good that you have a group. If you have three or more people in the group, that is a protection in and of itself, because you will stabilize each other.
I've noticed that through other things. Yes, definitely.
Yes, uh-huh.
Power in numbers.
Power in numbers, indeed, because we are all one, and every time we add one person to the group, then that makes our energy a little bit stronger, a little bit larger. We can shine a brighter light because all of us are focused on the same thing. But Peels, I just would look for a senior channel that you respect, trust, and then put the time in on learning what that channel has to offer you, and do it open to channel in a way that is as responsible as possible, not only for your own safety, but also because you're intending to create material that may be helpful to others, and you want to create the best material that you can.
Yes, of course.
So give it some time, give it some effort, and seek that one person that is right for you and your group.
That might be easier said than done, perhaps.
I know. That's so true. Yeah.
But thank you very much. That's
I'm thinking about creating a class online at the International Metaphysical University for people that want to channel, and if that is so, then that would be a second way to do it.
Well, that would be very interesting for sure. Yeah, definitely. Well, that's great. Thank you very much for your time. And thank you, Monica. And I guess I'll let you guys go because you don't have much time left in the show.
That's so true. But thanks so much, Peels.
All right.
Cheerio.
Great to hear from you.
Bye, Peels.
Monica, how'd we do? Do we have enough time left to close?
We did it. We actually got about 6.5 minutes left, just enough time for the outro and any quick last few comments or announcements or anything like that you want to add, Carla?
Just that the next thing coming up for me is after a trip to visit my mother-in-law in the beautiful state of Nebraska. And there's a certain amount of sarcasm in there. many beeves in that state, not so many people. Anyway, what I miss is rolling hills, you know. There are rolling hills in western Nebraska, but she doesn't live in western Nebraska, and I miss the hills of Kentucky. But at any rate, after I get back from Nebraska, I will be working with the International Metaphysical University people to create a class on the principles of the Law of One, following my book, Living the Law of One 101, The Choice. I'm excited about doing that. And my husband and I are going to take some time on the way out to Nebraska and driving back from Nebraska to go through each chapter and help me think about what I want to say about each body of material so that I can do a good job at making it come alive for people that take that class.
Okay. And when is this trip?
It'll be the Sunday after Thanksgiving and the week thereafter. So it'll be early December when I do this class, and I imagine I'll have it up in the spring.
All right. Fantastic. Okay, well, that pretty much wraps it up for today. And thank you so much for your time and words of wisdom, as always, Carla. It's just such a pleasure doing this. And to all our listeners, you have been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert. I'm your host, Monica Liel. If you've enjoyed this show, please visit our two websites, LLResearch.org, which is LL Research's archive website, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more. And bringforth.org, that's bring, the number 4, th.org, LL Research's community website featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. Thanks so much for listening in, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions. If you'd like to submit a question to Carla before the next show, please visit the Bring Forth forums at bringforth.org, navigate to the miscellaneous section, and post to the thread Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert, submitting questions. Or you can submit a private question to me at magicalmoons@gmail.com. That's magic with a K, M-A-G-I-C-K-A-L, moons@gmail.com. Have a wonderful week. We will be here next Friday, November 12th at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern, and we will see you then.